AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com.
Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us on this Wednesday morning. CERAWeek was last week. It is a global gathering of basically everything energy. It's put on by S&P Global. It normally doesn't leave many stones unturned when it comes to what is happening in the global energy markets. The list of speakers at CERAWeek is unbelievable. You've got energy companies, you've got governments from around the world, you've got energy consumers. They're all representative and what it represented. And one of those speakers was Growth Energy CEO Emily Score, and she joins us right now. Emily, it's great to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Chip. It's always great to talk with you.
Good, good, good. So, did I describe CERAWeek adequately? I mean, it's a huge meeting with a huge influence.
You did. It's been described as the Davos of energy. It really is the who's who globally, government, private sector, every part of the value chain. And here's what's unique. This is the place where the leaders throughout the globe are talking about the investment, the exciting things in the space of energy, but biofuels traditionally has not been on the agenda until now.
Okay.
And now we are, and that's what's different. And that's what was so exciting to be there, to make the business case for bioethanol as a fuel and potentially as a feedstock.
Emily, what changed? What got biofuels on the agenda?
So part of it, honestly, Chip, is what's happening in the renewable diesel space. And so a lot of it is if you're coming to the conversation from through the lens of the oil and gas sector, they're looking at renewable diesel. And it's getting them to start thinking differently. They're looking at their ESG responsibilities. It's getting them to think differently about things like E15. And they're looking at SAF. And so there's a confluence of a lot of things, a lot of opportunities. And suddenly people are taking a look at ethanol in a way that they hadn't before. They're looking at, can I invest in an ethanol company? What kind of business partnership or alliance or JV do I need to be forming? Because I need this feedstock, because I need it to be able to produce low carbon fuel, me, as an oil or gas company. So that's the change. That was very much the tenor of the conversation. People were very pleased to see Growth Energy there and to hear what we had to say and what I had to say. So it was good. It was good for the industry that we are finally entering those kinds of conversations.
Okay. Help me understand a little bit more about how the conversation has progressed to this point. I would assume that the transition to electricity has been a very hot topic of discussion over the years.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it absolutely is, because it is forcing top of mind for everyone in liquid fuels. What is the future of liquid fuels? How do we make sure that liquid fuels, that we could preserve our ability to thrive and grow in a low carbon market? And the great news is, Chip, ethanol, if you look at biodiesel, renewable diesel, SAF, and ethanol, right now, ethanol, you can blend E15. We don't need a lot of infrastructure. We don't need to overhaul the system. And we don't need any tax credits, unfortunately, like we do on something like SAF. So the conversation really was getting to higher blends, because that's how we decarbonize the internal combustion engine. That's how we compete with electric vehicles. And then what's the potential for something like sustainable aviation fuel? Okay. And what do those business partnerships look like to be able to create that?
Okay. What is the level of understanding about the capabilities of biofuels in reducing carbon? Is it well understood, or is there still a lot of education that has to take place?
There's a lot of education to be done.
Okay.
And so most people really don't understand it. And they don't understand the power of agriculture and the responsiveness of agriculture. And what's great is you look at the RFS and you look at the late 2000s, look at how quickly agriculture responded to that market opportunity of going from E0 to E10, how quickly we were able to mobilize and produce. And so it's really educating kind of the oil and gas side of liquid fuels that if there's a huge market opportunity, we agriculture and ethanol, we can respond quickly. We can mobilize mm-hmm. quickly. We have the capacity to meet demand.
Yeah. Yeah. Emily, it seems to me that there's another component here, and it's just how well funded the low carbon effort is going forward because of the Inflation Reduction Act. That the IRA spent the money, just didn't distribute it. Now, as that money is being distributed and divvied up, it's getting everybody's attention, the amount of money that's available through the IRA, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. It's been a total game changer. It's mm-hmm. opening up avenues of investment and opportunity for innovation because they weren't economical before. And you need those tax credits and incentives to be able to say, okay, we're going to take a chance. We're going to try this new technology that otherwise we wouldn't be able to afford to invest in. We wouldn't be, it's de-risking really the investment opportunities and the innovation opportunities. Now, there's a fair amount of healthy conversation. If you have a change in administration, what does that do to the investment?
Right.
And here's what's interesting is, you know, I continue to hear a lot of the market wants this, consumers want this, the customers want this. We can weather shifts because we want to be able to compete in this way too. And that's exciting, mm-hmm. Chip. That's exciting. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Boy, before we run out of time, Emily, let's talk specifically about the panel that you were on, the title, Business Models to Scale Biofuel Supply. What was the primary focus?
The primary focus is, you know, and these are the questions. Emily, are you going to see more consolidation? Are you going to see more JVs between oil and ethanol in the future?
Okay.
And it's an interesting question because we, on the ethanol side of the equation, we continue to be kind of pure play ethanol producers mm-hmm. or kind of on the agribusiness side of the equation. And we're starting to see, and we've seen already that there are alliances forming in terms of on the SAF side of the equation, ethanol producer will provide the feedstock with the technology provider and then an offtake agreement with the airlines. So mm-hmm. it was fun to be at a place where I'm getting questions on the business side of the equation, not just the policy side of the equation.
Right. Right. Very interesting. Okay. What's next? What is the next step that these potential partners in developing biofuels for SAF or renewable diesel for the list of items that you were talking about, what is the next step that they want to see?
Well, the next step that I told them we have to have, it comes back to Washington, D.C., and it comes back to policy, Chip. We've got to get guidance coming out of Treasury on 40B and 45Z. We've got to get that E15 summer waiver. And so we do need these policy decisions and clarity and consistency because, of course, what does business need? They need clarity and they need certainty so that they can have the market. So all roads do lead back to Washington.
Yeah.
But we have a handle on that. We understand what we need. And we're talking every day to the policymakers to try and get those answers as quickly as we can.
Okay. So the clarity on the 40B and the 45Z credits is the final adjustments to the GREET model. Vilsack said back on March 1 that it would be weeks and not months for the update. Tomorrow's going to be 4 weeks. Any indication? Have they given you any indication of when that's going to be released?
They have not. We continue to hear weeks, not months. You're right. It's been 4 weeks. And as antsy as we get each day, they have to get it right. We know that. Secretary Vilsack knows that. And so we'll just continue to just keep pressing every single day.
You know, during this process, Emily, over the last 4 weeks, I would say that the level of understanding among casual observers about just how important the GREET model is and what these final adjustments are the level of understanding of how important it is has increased dramatically, hasn't it?
It has. It has. Just the fact that people know GREET, that yep. acronym is something, a shorthand that people are using on a daily basis.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And the good news is that wasn't the case 2 years ago. So we've made so much, we've made progress. We've crossed mm-hmm. that threshold where Treasury has said, yes, we have to use this model as a baseline when we're looking at ethanol, when yep. we're evaluating ethanol and its carbon intensity. So that was huge success. And yep. now, all right, if you're going to tweak the model as they said they would do, you have to hew as closely as you can to that GREET, to the original right. GREET. So
right.
that we have the maximum flexibility to innovate, to invest, to get credit for what we're doing in the
yep.
hardware.
Yep. That, and boy, that's the key right there. Credit for what we are doing, what has already been done. As you know, what we're talking about is tracking the carbon intensity score of corn production so that ethanol producers have a better idea of what kind of a product they're putting out. Emily, great conversation. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. That is Emily Score. She is the CEO of Growth Energy. We got the Farmer Forum coming your way next here on AgriTalk.